Good evening. Here we are for the course, the C1 level. Let's start. The new course I've prepared. Let's see, page 32. Okay. The children's lives. Children's lives have changed enormously over the last 50 years. But do they have a happier childhood than you or I did? It's difficult to look back on one's own childhood without some element of nostalgia. I have four brothers and sisters, and my memories are all about being with them, playing board games on the living floor, or spending days in the street with the other neighborhood children, racing up and down on our bikes or exploring the nearby woods. My parents scarcely appear in these memories, except as providers, either of meals or of severe reprimands after some particular hazardous adventures. These days, in the UK at least, the nature of childhood has changed dramatically. Firstly, families are smaller, and there are far more only children. It's common for both parents to work outside the home, and there is the feeling that there just isn't time to bring up a large family, or that no one could possibly afford to have more than one child. As a result, today's boys and girls spend much of their time alone. Another major change is that youngsters today tend to spend a huge proportion of their free time at home, inside. More than anything, this is due to the fact that parents worry far more than they used to about real or imagined dangers, so they wouldn't dream of letting their children play outside. By themselves. Finally, the kind of toys children have and the way they play is totally different. Computer and video games have replaced the board games and more active pastimes of my childhood. The irony is that so many of these devices are called interactive. The fact that you can play electronic games on your own further increases the sense of isolation felt by many young people today. Do these changes mean that children today have a less idyllic childhood than I had? I personally believe that they do, but perhaps every generation feels exactly the same. Well, I think she has right. Without looking back at the article, try to remember how the words in italic were changed to make the article more enjoyable to read. You see the exercise E? Children's lives have changed in a big way. How does she say it here? Dramatically. Being in the street with the other children who live near us, the children of the neighborhood. Going up and down on your bikes, racing. After some particularly dangerous adventure, hazardous. My parents don't appear very often in these memories. Not very often, scarcely. Think that no one has enough money to have more than one child? Has enough money? Afford. That children have a less happy childhood than I had? Idyllic. Okay. Then. We can do some common expressions and idioms. But I almost feel, to some extent, You remember? However, in the end, if oh no, that's not what it is. Let's talk about the office of the about the nurses. Breaking the silence, page 36. There has been made a poll, and people had to choose which was the noise which bothers most. So what does affect you the most? Other people's mobile rings, people making personal phone calls, people slurping tea or coffee, people tapping the keyboard of their computer, the boss's voice, the crunch of people eating crisps, the hold music on the telephone, the hum of the air conditioning. So, then, let's concentrate on the pronunciation. Consonant clusters. Consonant clusters, combinations of two or three consonant sounds, clothes, spring, can be difficult to pronounce, especially if it is a combination that's not common in your language. Three consonant clusters at the beginning of words always begin with S. For example, scream. Three consonant clusters at the end of words are often either plurals, months, for example, third person singular verbs, once, or regular past tenses, asked. Try always to pronounce the end of the words as you're not used to in Spanish, please. So, let's practice somewhat. Click. Slam. Crash. Slurp. Drip. Snore. Stammer. You know what snore means, no? Roncar. You know what stammer means? Big yard is tartamudear. Three sounds. Screech. Scream. Splash. Okay. At the end of the word, you have it too. Two sounds. Shouts. Sniffs. Yelled. Hummed. Crunched. Numbled. Crisps. Rattled. So, please pronounce the last letters. Yeah? Okay. Then, look at the glossary and listen to the program again. Then, with a partner, try to answer the questions. So, we are going to be to see what is added here. Greg Wood, who always makes the right noises, is here. Thank you so much, Ed. Some noises, I'm sorry, you have to read it at page 58 if you have this book. Otherwise, you should listen to the CD. It is CD 2, track 10. Some noises can be really annoying. I'm sure we all like or dislike inappropriate music in shops, for example. Most of them made by companies. A new book called Sound Business claims that businesses which spend enormous amounts on their images are doing nothing about the way they sound. We send its author, Julian Treasure, out onto the streets to explain. This is a typical London street scene, so we've stepped into a well-known mobile phone retailer. There is quite a lot of street noise intruding into this store when the cars go past, And they've got over the top of a very nasty hum from the air conditioning system. There is some music playing. I don't know who chose it. I don't know what it is to got to do with this brand. So we've stepped in for a quiet coffee, which unfortunately is a contradiction in terms in most of London. And this coffee bar has got no absorbent surfaces at all. Everything is hard and reflective, so all the sound is crashing and bashing around inside. There's a lovely buzz in the background you can hear from a huge chiller cabinet, which is rattling and vibrating. On top of that, when the barista makes a coffee, your nerves get shredded and your brain gets fried. So I'm afraid this is a long way from a relaxing coffee that really it should be. Espresso machines feature with chiller cabinets and diesel engine as the top three most annoying noises. But the important consideration for any business is that sound changes the way people think and act. The speed at which they shop or eat in restaurants, for example. According to independent academic research, appropriate sound can boost sales in a shop by 30%. Bad music has the opposite effect on shopping. I hate most of the music they play in shops, and it is a very good way of getting me out of the store very, very quickly. I kind of switch off when I go into shops, and often I have headphones on. Well, it depends on the kind of music. It's kind of relaxing. I don't like it. I don't like it too noisy. You can't think anything, so you just go out again. And then there is the office. It's claimed that the noise in open plan offices can cut the productivity by knowledge workers by 2/3. Excuse me. As a matter of fact, I have got the call. So we're walking now into what I think is a fairly typical BBC office, and it's filled with the most distracting sound in the whole world, which is other people's conversation. As a business, sound is an enormously powerful tool, and at the moment, it's just like firing a machine gun at random. There's noise and sound coming out of business in all directions. Nobody's conscious of it. Nobody's managing it. Nobody's aware of the effect it's having on the people that they are trying to affect. Many organizations spend millions on how they look and nothing at all on how they sound. This is what experts consider to be right sort of noise, randomly generated from a computer-based selection and used in this case to soothe the nerves of passengers at Glasgow Airport. Sales at the airport shops rose by 10%, demonstrating that good sound can also be good business. So we focus on the glossary and let students read the definitions. The book claims that business spend enormous amounts of money on images, but not on the way they sound. Let's see. What does the book sound business claim? So the book sound business claim that we spend too little on sound and too much on image. What are some of the noises he complains about? In the mobile phone shop and in the coffee shop. In the mobile phone shop, it's the street noise, the air conditioning, the music. In the coffee shop, the buzz of the chiller cabinet, which is rattling and vibrating, the barista who makes a lot of noise when he makes coffee. 3. According to the reporter, what are the 3 most annoying noises? Espresso machines, chiller cabinets, and diesel engines. 4. What effect does appropriate sound, inappropriate sound have on sales in a shop? Appropriate sound can boost sales in a shop by 30%. Bad music has the opposite effect on shoppers. How many of the people he stopped seemed positive about background music? Only one, who finds it relaxing. When Julian visits the BBC office, what does he call the most distracting sound in the whole world? Other people's conversation. What's the problem with the way business are using sound at the moment? It's totally random. Nobody is managing it or is aware of the effect it's having. What do experts think is the right kind of sound to have in a public place? Randomly generated music from a computer-based selection. Where was it used and why? And what effect did it have? It was used at Glasgow Airport to soothe the nerves of the passengers. Sales at the airport shops rose up by 10%. So you see how important is the noise in our lives. And then there are these articles about people who live in a neighborhood where nobody talks to nobody, to anybody. There's Lost in Translation, what we are going to read now. Okay. Please take your book, page 42. Lost in Translation. The importance of the lowly translator to our understanding of foreign literature cannot be underestimated. Like ghosts hovering over the text, these rarely mentioned linguists can profoundly alter the tone and style of a book. The difference a translator can make to the style and flow of a novel can be vast. Here are 2 interpretations of the opening lines to The Wind-Up Bird Chronicle by the Japanese novelist Haruki Murakami. Extract 1. When the phone rang, I was in the kitchen, boiling a pot full of spaghetti and whistling along with an FM broadcast over the overture to Rossini's The Thieving Magpie, which has to be the perfect music for cooking pasta. Extract 2. I'm in the kitchen cooking spaghetti when the woman calls. Another moment until the spaghetti is done. There I am, whistling the prelude to Rossini's La Gazza Ladra along with the FM radio. Perfect spaghetti cooking music. The first is written by Murakami, officially sanctioned translator J. Rubin, and flows neatly and cleanly. The second, written by Alfred Bernborn, is much more staccato, even neurotic. The former gained Murakami a wider English-speaking audience, However, countless fans are besotted with Bernadette's claim to stay. To them, he has become the voice of Murakami. So it depends on how you translate. Translating can also be a controversial business. Constance Garnett was arguably the first to bring the Russian literary giants to British readers and churned out 70 English translations of major works throughout her lifetime. She worked incredibly quickly, making mistakes and skipping awkward passages and phrases. Yet one of Garnett's greatest crimes, according to Russian critics, was that she applied Victorian sensibilities to works by the likes of Tolstoy and Dostoevsky. Korney Chukovsky, commenting on Dostoevsky's notes from Andercoin, wrote, "With Constance Garnett, it becomes a safe, bland script. Not a volcano, but a smooth lawn, move in the English manner, which is to say a complete distortion of the original." Russian-born American poet Joseph Brodsky remarked, "The reason English-speaking readers can barely tell the difference between Tolstoy and Dostoevsky is that they aren't reading the prose of either one. They're reading Constance Garnett." Translators continued to use Garnett's text as a guide for decades, until the acclaimed Richard Pevere and Larissa Volokonsky set out to finally produce faithful versions of the Russian masterworks in the 90s. Yet in October 2007, British translator Andrew Bromfield's edition of War and Peace blew the debate wide open, shortening the novel from 1,267 pages to just 886, and giving it a happy ending. Its publisher Echo boasted that Bromfield edition was twice as short, four times as interesting, more peace and less war. What do you think about that? Let's give some synonyms of hardly, barely, deeply, profoundly. It could be arguably, enormous, vast, with little color of excitement, bland, difficult to deal with, awkward, original, strange, quirky, humble, low in status, lowly, with short, sharp sounds, staccato, steadily, neatly, flat and even, smooth, true and accurate, faithful. So, at home, try to answer the questions you will find in 5. You turn the page to 3C, please. Are you suffering from affluenza? Here we invented a new illness. Page 44, please. Affluenza, you will see in the article, it's made from putting two words together, affluent and influenza. It's an invented word, of course. Affluent, it means having a lot of money and a good standard of living. And influenza means a flu, an infectious illness. How to Be Successful and Stay Sane by Oliver James. There is currently an epidemic of affluenza throughout the world. An obsessive, envious, keeping up with the Joneses that has resulted in a huge increase in depression and anxiety among millions. Over a 9-month period, best-selling author and psychologist Oliver James traveled around the world to try and find out why. He discovered how, despite very different cultures and levels of wealth, affluenza is spreading. Cities he visited include Sydney, Singapore, Moscow, Copenhagen, New York, and Shanghai. And in each place, he interviewed several groups of people in the hope of finding not only why this is happening, but also how one can increase the strength of one's emotional immune system. He asks, why do so many more people want what they haven't got? I want to be someone they are not, despite being richer and freer from traditional restraints. So, let's go and read the article. In his earlier book, Britain on the Coach, Oliver James asserted that advanced capitalism makes money out of misery and dissatisfaction, as if it were encouraging us to fill up or emotional emptiness with material goods. In this book, he explores the idea further, and it is terrific. A lot of readers wanting to put their finger on why the affluent world they live in makes them so uneasy will want to cheer. Here he is saying loud and clear that capitalism is bad for your mental health. And then he tells us why this is the case, and what we can do about it. My focus, explains James, is on why we are so messed up, not with giving a false promise of the possibility of happiness. So why are we so messed up? It's because of what James calls selfish capitalism, or more catchily, affluenza, a virus-like condition that spreads through affluent countries. In these countries, notably English-speaking ones, people define themselves by how much money they make. They are also ruled by superficial values, how attractive they look, how famous they are, how much they are able to show off. It's a wonderfully clear and cogent thesis. Affluenza, as defined by Oliver James, is clearly recognizable as our way of life. It spreads because it feeds on itself. When you try to make yourself better by buying a car, or building muscles in the gym, or spraying on a fake tan, or having a facelift, you actually make yourself feel worse, which makes you want to buy more things. The author's antidote for affluenza is simple. Look inward, not outward. Don't be a sheep. Try to be beautiful rather than attractive. Embrace the family. Don't see life as a competition. Don't watch too much TV. Simple perhaps, but will it be enough? What do you think about the article? Can you remember words from the text which means rich, affluent, wealthy, to have something that belongs to you, own? The enjoyment of special and expensive things, luxury. Now, for the vocabulary, Choose the right word from each pair according to meaning, collocation, or register. Mom, can you lend me some money? I'm broke. I'm trying to get a loan from the bank to buy a car. We are going to have to be a bit careful this month if we don't want to end up in the red. The company has been in debt for the last 6 months and may have to close down. One of my cousins is absolutely loaded. She inherited a fortune from her parents. When you're abroad, you're getting a better exchange rate if you take money out at a cash machine. We like living here because we have much better standard of living. I need to get a better job. We can't make ends meet. Take turns to tell your partner about someone who is rather tight-fisted. Lives beyond their means. Has more money than sense. Was given a grant to study abroad. Buys and sells share. Charges high fees for what they do. Has difficulty making ends meet. Has spent a fortune on cosmetic surgery. And now, pronunciation. Say the sentences below. Do the pink letters make the same or different sounds in each sentence? My great-grandfather was very wealthy, but incredibly mean. I've just had a really good idea. Even though I left home early, I nearly missed the flight. I've heard that she doesn't earn much. Okay? So, we pronounce the word. For example, chair, bear, peer, wear. Ear, appear, earring, fear, hear, nuclear. Bird, earth, learn. Tree, beat, creek, deal, neatly, please, scream, egg, death, jealous, pleasure, spread, unhealthy, train, break, steak, car, heart. So you see, the pronunciation is very important. And then I would like to ask you, have you contracted the influenza virus? Put a tick or cross next to the following statements. I would like to be a wealthy person. I would like to have my name known by many people, being famous. I would like to successfully hide the signs of aging. I would like to be admired by many people. I would like to have people comment often about how attractive they look. How attractive I look, excuse me. I like to keep up with fashions in hair and clothing. I often compare what I own with others. Possessions can be just as important as people. I don't think so. Shopping or thinking about what to buy greatly preoccupies me. I'm less concerned with what work I do than with what I get paid for it. I admire people who own expensive homes, cars, and clothes. My life would be better off If I owned certain things I don't have now, the things I will own will say a lot about how well you've done in life. You have done in life. I want a lot of luxury in life. So try to cross or take the statements and see who you are. According to your answers, there is an answer on page 117. Let's have a look. Can't find it. Maybe it's in this one. 117. Maybe it's here. Yes. If you answered yes to any of the questions, then you have the virus. The more yes answers you have, the worse you have it. Well, that's an easy answer. Maybe I do have it. I'm sorry. You should be honest. I'm honest. I think I've got it. I have to work on myself, on my own. So, next, week, maybe we can do the article, I Wish I Had Married for Money, Not for Love. It's about a lady, and she married out of love, and then she had a lot of problems, material problems. And then she sees her friends who got married to a very rich man, and they're really happy. Well, that's what she thinks. So, she says, feminism is fine, but there is a lot to be said for having your bills paid. That's true also. So try to read the article page 46, okay? And maybe answer the question. And then next we will go to the fourth chapter. And if you have time, maybe you can see the movies Braveheart of Mel Gibson, Gone with the Wind of Victor Fleming, or Spartacus. Yes? It's an interesting article. You will see. So, have a nice week. Have a nice evening. A good night. Don't get influenza. Don't get affluenza. I hope you won't be sick. Bye-bye.